are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
And 1 2-second rant. It's 2017. All the Arizona Fall League games better be televised this year.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Show them all. Because all those parks in Arizona,
they won't be,
have all the technology. That's part of the reason why the Fall League is there, why they send all these guys there.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
The MLB channel would rather show you some 1980s or 1990s baseball movie than show Arizona Fall League games, and it's ridiculous.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is our prospect guy, our lead prospect analyst, our prospect guru, and that's Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Good, man. Exciting time of the year for someone that dives deep into prospects like I do. All these call-ups and Arizona Fall League rosters, and you kind of get feel for where teams are at with certain guys with how they're moving them around. So
yep.
It's always nice.
Yeah, we're talking the day before rosters expand.
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow's September 1st. But today we're going to focus on something a little bit different. We already talked about some call-up guys. Probably talk about some more on the Monday podcast. But right now I want to focus mainly on the Arizona Fall League rosters, which were announced this last week. And so we thought you and I'd get together, maybe have just a quick chat about some of the prospects that are going to be there, because I think it's a pretty decent crop of guys.
Yeah, it's traditionally, it always is. I mean, you get guys like Chris Bryant who have played in this league, and, you know, you're looking at other studs, like Mike Trout, I think, was out here 1 year. Bryce Harper was out here. Cody Bellinger, you know, guys like Willie Calhoun, who didn't, you know, not in that class of guys, but he's out here. Michael Kopech was an interesting guy. Alex Reyes was out here. I mean, it's beginning. The interesting thing is teams aren't – they used to be a little bit afraid to send a lot of their pitchers out here just because of the environment. The run-scoring environment is massive, but doesn't look like that's the thing anymore. You're getting a lot of interesting guys out here.
Yeah, so. I was really looking forward to going. Unfortunately, my brother has decided he's going to get – married that weekend, the weekend of the first pitch Arizona forums. So it looks like, unfortunately, because my brother's an asshole, I'm not going to be able to make it.
Yeah, I heard that. I saw your post on Rotographs, and I laughed. So hopefully someone can film the wedding for you, right? Because
I understand. I can, like, Skype in or FaceTime into the wedding, right?
Yeah, right? As long as your presence is there. Pretty soon... That'll be the norm, and I bet you in about 20 years anyways with the way technology is. But it's a bummer. I doubt I'll be able to make it out there either. It's been a dream of mine to make it out there. I have some family that lives out there too, so it'd probably be nice and easy for me to do it. But I don't think, number one, I'd probably get hung by the lady at home. Number two is I don't know if my job would ever let me miss like 2 weeks in a row like that just to fully soak it all in.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe 2018 we'll make a big Friends of Fantasy Benefits presence felt.
I hope so.
At AFL, because this is every year I plan on going, and then something pops up, and unfortunately I can't. So, but let's just jump in, and I'm just going to kind of throw some of the big name players at you. You tell me what you think about them, and obviously the industry as a whole will get a big look at them when they're at AFL. Victor Robles, top prospect, largely considered a top 5 to 10 prospect in baseball, is going to be there out of the Washington Nationals organization. Give me your thoughts on Victor Robles this season and what we can expect from him once he eventually reaches the major leagues.
Yeah, man. Pretty sure everything positive about Victor Robles has been spilled on this podcast or elsewhere because the dude is a stud. It's not too often that we throw a future first-round pick tag on somebody, and I think Robles is a future first-round pick in fantasy leagues just because he has everything. The power, he's kind of, to me, a guy that that eventually will hit 20 to 25 homers, I think, just because I think he's projectable and will grow into that. He's got the plus hit tool already with the speed. There's nothing not to like about Mr. Robles' game. But he's definitely the big ticket item. He's comfortably in the top five on my prospect list. I mean, he's 20 years old and was having a fantastic season in the minor leagues in Double A. 323, 396, 492 with the power's a little light. Three homers in Double A, eight steals, but he was in High A this year. So altogether, he's got 10 homers and 24 steals, and he's hitting over 300 with an OBP in the 380 range and a slugging percentage in the 490 range. So you'll take that everywhere you go. And I kind of think, oddly enough, for a 20-year-old doing all that, I think he's getting massively overshadowed this year by two other players that are younger than him that are doing just as well in Double A and a level higher in Mr. Acuña and Eloy Jimenez. But that's not a slight on Robles because obviously he's still elite. And he's going to be an interesting redraft guy for 2018 because I think he might get drafted in some leagues. Just because I think it's possible that he makes an appearance in the second half.
Yeah, what I like about Robles is I think he could be a better version of Starling Marte.
I was going to say that. I think he's going to walk a lot more.
Mm-hmm. And probably strike out a little bit less.
Yeah, probably a lot less, to be honest.
So, I think he is a future, you know, 290 to 300 average kind of bat, walking about, you know, 7 to 10% of the time, striking out about 15% of the time. I don't think he's got much more than, or I don't think he'll develop much more than league average power. So I think you probably have a little bit better or a little higher ceiling in terms of his power than I would. But I think the speed is legit. I think this is a guy who's going to steal 30 to 40 bags at the major league level. And so that for me is kind of where the Marte comps come in.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason why I say in this era of home run production, I mean, you're looking at something like over 200 players this year are going to have 20 home runs or more.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that Robles adds the handful he needs to get over to that 20 mark just because of the environment we're in. So that's kind of influenced how it has to change how we project prospects a little bit just because the environment has changed significantly over the last few years. So I'm adding a few extra home runs pretty much to everybody. So I think I agree with what you're saying, though. Without that inflation we're adding, I still think he's a true 15-ish homer guy, if that makes any sense. But I think this environment will tick him up a little higher.
All right. You mentioned Acuña, who's going to be there as well. Braves outfield prospect. Who's been just a really, I mean, I think people were high on him coming into the season, but I think now people are getting really, really hyped on this kid. You want to talk about why and then what you would project for him moving on into the major leagues eventually?
This is my, spoiler alert, my number one prospect in the game right now.
Oh, wow, really?
And that is over guys like Yoan Moncada, over Eloy Jimenez, over Victor Robles, like we just talked about. Acuña, I recently just made that. So I'm watching Acuña play, and it's just this dude is a franchise cornerstone, and it's that doesn't get thrown around lightly either. We talked about how, you know, Robles is a first round pick in fantasy. Robles is a potential top three pick, Acuña is a top three pick in fantasy for me, like down the line if everything goes how I think it would. 19 years old. And putting up a 159 WRC plus in AAA at 19. That follows a 158 he put up in AA this year. He's been unreal. 338 with eight homers and nine steals in 48 games in AAA. In AA, you're looking at 57 games with nine homers and 19 bags. I think the upside is similar to Robles, but you got to remember Acuña's a full year younger. Well, no, he's about 9 months younger, and he's also a little bit better across the board. I think he's probably 5% better at everything than Robles is, and he's younger. So, I mean, that's gold.
I don't know if he's quite as fast as Robles, but he still steals bases at a pretty good clip. I think the power
I'd agree with that.
Is definitely got a higher ceiling.
agree with that.
Like, yeah. I think there is a legitimate chance for a guy like Acuña to have a 30-30 season.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, not necessarily right away. I'm not going to say.
No, like, no, no.
You know, because I'm assuming he'll be up at some point next year, especially with the Braves being willing to move Ozzie Albies up so quickly. I can't imagine that they wouldn't be willing to do the same with Acuña. They seem like they care a little bit less about holding back service time than maybe some other organizations would. I don't think he's going to, you know, be a 30-30 guy next season, but I think, you know, in the next 3 to 4 years, we could be looking at a guy that pushes those limits and is a future first-round pick in fantasy. And I think if you're trying to buy, you've lost your opportunity
to get no any. Way.
Yeah, I mean, now you've got to pay full freight. I would still do that.
Yeah, if you can. I mean, and you got to think where the Braves are. I think their window for contention for the wild card, for a realistic shot at a wild card spot, is probably next year.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think that fits their timeline with their young pitching they got coming up and everything. So I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of gets the Chris Bryant treatment, where he's down for like 2 weeks in April.
Yeah.
Just to get the extra year. So I definitely think Acuña is going to be an interesting guy, because I think he should be drafted in next year in every single redraft format imaginable. And I would think he probably goes similarly to where Moncada went this year, if that makes any sense. But, you know, I think it also will be more bang for your buck, because I think he could get called up sooner. I was kind of surprised, to be honest, that Acuña was on this list for the Fall League, because he didn't get much of a break coming off of last year. I mean, he played out in the winter ball in Australia, which is it was a long season out there. Then he goes to spring training, and then he kind of does what he's doing. He's been playing pretty much for a year straight right now. So I was kind of surprised they put him on this Arizona Fall League roster. I mean, it's looked at as always like as quote unquote finishing school for prospects, but I'm kind of surprised they didn't just tell him to shut it down and come back next spring. But I think them doing this, they want to get him a look against, I don't want to say better competition, because he's in AAA at 19. I mean, what else is there? But I think you're getting a look at some of the higher velocity, because you're going to see velocity is going to be a big thing out in Arizona. So maybe they're trying to test him against the velocity. Maybe he's the type of guy that plays for like a week and a half and they send him home. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to mention that. I mean, just because guys are brought to the Arizona Fall League doesn't mean that they're going to play there the entire Fall League season. So yeah, it's something we got to be careful of. Like, you know, it can be he may head home after a week. They may just want to get him a little bit of time, a little bit more at bats against different guys, and then head back out. Because, you know, especially with some of these big-name guys that played a lot, they want to give him a little bit of a rest heading into next year, and they don't want to get him hurt.
I was disappointed looking at these Fall League rosters. They always break teams. If you're not familiar, there's six teams in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So each team is assigned five major league teams that feed prospects into it. And for some reason, the Braves, Blue Jays and Padres are all on the same team. So I'm disappointed we don't have Vlad Jr. in the Fall League, because he'd be playing, or Bo Bichette, he'd be playing with Acuña. Kyle Lewis from the Mariners is on the same team. Michael Chavis from the Red Sox. It's a stacked roster out here. Alex Jackson, Max Pentecost, a lot of Lourdes Gurriel, Josh Naylor, Austin Riley, Louis Urias, Kyle Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to go to Arizona, this would be the team I'd be following around, the Peoria Javelinas, because that roster is very, very nice.
Glendale's got to have some interesting guys on it, too, with Chicago, the Dodgers, though I haven't checked their actual rosters, so maybe not. We'll see.
Dodgers, Indians, mm-hmm. Phillies, Pirates, White Sox, and Phillies on that. Yeah. So, yeah.
You would think they would have a pretty good roster as well. Let's talk about some Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker, outfield prospect for Houston. He'll be in the Arizona Fall League playing for Mesa. What are your thoughts on his season so far this year, and what can we look forward as a major league eventual?
I am very, very high on Kyle Tucker. I like all this optimism we have on this podcast. Normally I'm kind of
It's normally a prospect podcast. It's meant for optimism.
I kind of think I have a tendency to sometimes skew a little bit on the negative side too much when we do these evaluations, but this is a really good show as far as positivity, so I like that. But Kyle Tucker, man, he's not a flashy guy, but he's just a guy that just gets it done. I know that's lame as far as analysis goes, but across two levels this year, you're looking at 23 homers, and you're looking at 21 steals. That'll play anywhere. His walk rate's nice. Strikeout, doesn't strike out much. He's right field profile. And I'm really high on Tucker. I think ultimately he develops into a middle-of-the-order bat. You can probably get away with even playing him in center field right now if you wanted to. He's that athletic. I think the sky is the ceiling, for this guy. There's an interesting debate on the Razzball podcast between Kyle Tucker and Victor Robles as far as who you would take. I kind of side on the Robles.
Yeah, I think it's got to be.
But it's closer than you might think. I mean, they're both 20 years old. They're both in AA. You just been hearing about Robles for a little bit longer, I feel like, because Tucker was just a recent draft pick, and Robles, those international kids, they sign when they're like 16. So you've been kind of hearing about Robles for a little bit longer than you have Tucker.
The average is safer.
Yes, for Robles. I agree with you. I 100% agree with you, and he's faster as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's more power, a little bit more power, I think, with Tucker.
Yep, agree with everything you're saying.
In today's era, I think I would prefer a guy like Robles because the speed is going to be
game-changing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's going to be plenty of guys who can hit you 30 home runs. And, you know, if Tucker is that one of those guys, I don't even know if he's necessarily a 30 home run bat. But he's definitely a guy who could be like a 25-15, you know, hit 270, hit 270, yep. 280 at the major league level. And that's a very, very good player, but that's not a Robles type player.
See, I think the safety is higher with Tucker. But you're not taking a guy that high in a fantasy draft like that. Like, you know what I mean? That explosive, like Tucker or Robles, and worrying about the safety aspect, you're looking for big upside. So I would go with Robles, like you said. I agree with you. But I think people sleep on Tucker a little bit because, I mean, last year he had 32 stolen bases. This year he's got 21. He took a big power jump this year. Doesn't strike out for a power hitter. He's a contact-oriented guy. I like this kid a lot. I mean, he doesn't have – but you're right, though, because Robles has the standout tools. Kyle Tucker doesn't have the standout tools because he's got a couple tools that are about the same. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Robles has the elite tool, and I think – blame it on Dansby Swanson because he kind of changed kind of how people view things.
Mm-hmm.
Always take the tiebreaker for me is if a guy has a standout tool, you take that.
And don't get me wrong. Like, I love guys like Kyle Tucker, and Kyle Tucker is a guy – that I do love as a prospect, and I will love as a major leaguer, you know, as long as his development, you know, continues to progress, because he gives you, you know, either at worst average of everything, but it's going to be above average of everything. And those are the kind of players that are great to have in fantasy, especially in Dynasty, because you don't have to necessarily change the way you build the rest of your team in a draft or on a Dynasty team based on the guy you have. You know, a guy like Robles, who's going to offer a lot more speed than I think he will power, you then have to compensate that lack of power somewhere else. Like Tucker is going to contribute in so many different categories, or at least not be a negative in any category, allows you to have more flexibility when building a dynasty keeper or even a redraft roster.
I agree with that. That's a very valid point. I like that. You're thinking a little bit different than I am on there, and I think that's extremely important because – like you said, you have to. I think Tucker is a guy that when he comes up, he's going to stay up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just. Robles is a guy with, like, the skills are so high level that they're more volatile. Does that make sense? He's more risky.
Yep.
And he might struggle out of the gate and get sent down and come back up. I mean, and the Nationals, who knows where the Nationals will be in 2 years, which is Robles' more realistic ETA. Harper's a free agent at that time. He could be the centerpiece of the team, or he could kind of be a compliment piece to Harper.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a ton of different narratives that can go this way. He could be their best player. They could be in the bottom, or they could be in the basement of the NL East, or they could be really good and have guys like Adam Eaton still around and not push him either. So it's just a lot of things to go against him or for him. It's hard to project things. You're not just projecting Robles' ability. You're projecting the Nationals roster in 2 years, which is impossible.
When do you think Tucker is up? 2019?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Do you think there's a shot he gets up next year?
The Astros are deep, man. It's. I would say more realistically for Tucker it would be 2019. Just because the Astros have so many serviceable outfielders. Like Gilberto Celestino, and they got, you know, Ramon Laureano.
Fisher.
Derek Fisher. Not that he's an outfielder. But A.J. Reed's going to get at bat somewhere. By the way, A.J. Reed, minor league home run leader, so hopefully you guys didn't give up on him after his poor cup of coffee last year, because he's not done as a prospect. So, not technically a prospect, but don't forget about him. And, you know, Gurriel is still around. You have to think he'd be around for another year or two with the contract he signed. Obviously, Bregman, Correa, they're all need at bats. Springer in the outfield.
Yeah, Gurriel's under contract till 2000. He's a free agent in 2021, so he's not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, so I mean, they're both in crowded situations.
Are you worried? I mean, you know, AJ Reed's not going to be at the Arizona Fall League, but just because you mentioned him, you worried about, you know, still struggling with strikeouts, still struggling with a middling average, just at the AAA level. I mean, he's still striking out 26.5% of the time. Mm-hmm, he's only posting a .262 average, and this isn't AAA. Now, 33 home runs is great, and we knew he had power, but will he ever make enough contact to make that work at the major league level?
Probably not to reach his full ceiling, but I don't see any reason he can't be...
Chris Carter-esque?
Yeah, I was going to say Brandon Moss-ish, but that's the same. I mean, yeah, that's still a useful player when you, if you use him optimally, keep him away from lefties and stuff, but that's also...
I think
more important.
Brandon Moss, the ability to play the outfield too helps him though.
Yeah, Reed can't do that.
Yeah, he can barely play first base.
Yeah, that's valid. But either way you look at it, that's still a guy that's going to command 450 plate appearances a year.
Yeah, and with Carlos Beltran coming off the books after this year, there will be potentially a spot for him to kind of come up and just DH.
Yeah, I agree with that. So there's a million possibilities, and I think Kyle Tucker will fit in. And the thing with Tucker is he's the type of guy, they're not going to bring him up for a cup of coffee if someone gets hurt and send him back down.
Yeah.
They're going to put him on the 40-man, and they're going to ride him out the rest of the way. Like, mm-hmm. He's not going to bounce him up and down.
I completely agree with you. All right, let's – man, I was just – because I had the Astros contract page up. Great over on Baseball's Perspective, they have the COTS contracts.
Oh yeah, great website.
Great website. If you're ever wondering like how long teams have certain guys for, what prices they have them for, it's a fantastic way to check that out. But on it, they had Jose Altuve with an opt out in 2018, or an option in 2018, and I was like, that's got to be a team option. So I just went to Jose Altuve's actual contract. His team, they've got a team option for him in 2018-2019. You want to guess how much?
$5 million.
$6 million for 2018, $6.5 for 2019.
Might as well pick him up now.
For the MVP of the league.
Might as well pick those options up now, yeah.
Because, I mean, at least my opinion, Altuve's got to be MVP this year, right?
I'm thinking so. I wouldn't be surprised if Trout got it, though, either.
I mean, I think Trout's still going to get votes, but I think the amount of time that Trout missed hurts him, and I think the fact that Houston's been so good this year, I think, and voters tend to get a little bit of fatigue when it comes to guys winning every year.
Yeah, it bugs the hell out of me, but it seems like they look for a reason not to give it to Trout every year.
Yeah,
and it's just
All right, let's move on to the next guy that we're going to talk about, and if I can find my sheet, Francisco Mejia. Catcher. It's interesting. Is he
kind
coming
of catcher?
Up?
Kind of catcher. Did you see yesterday?
They're gonna play him at third base.
He started and played the whole game for AA at third base.
Is this in preparation for a September call up?
he's already on the 40 man. So that is extremely possible. I hate it in the sense that
from a fantasy perspective, right? Not necessarily from real life.
Yeah, he doesn't have the defensive chops right now to be an everyday catcher. He's still a bit raw behind the plate. He has an absolute cannon for an arm, like one of the best arms in the minor leagues at any position, I would say. And so that's going to help. That's going to play anywhere, especially at third base. So I'm not worried about like any of that. But I would much rather they just left him down there to develop and just catch, because I'm not as big on a bat like his that he's not hitting for much power. Mm-hmm. He's got 14 home runs in Double A, which is considerable boost from his 4 that he had last year. The slug percentage is still 490, which is still nice. Again, he's a common breed with him and Tucker and Robles and Acuna. He only strikes out 13% of the time, walks 6% of the time. So, I mean, he's pretty athletic for a catcher. He added 7 stolen bases. I think he can handle the third base thing. I just think giving him a partial playing time at third base can kind of get him in the lineup more. I just think he needs more seasoning in the minor leagues. And I know that's not the answer a lot of fantasy guys want to hear. But also, on the flip side of that, if he's going to get, you know, enough time this year and impress a little bit, Cleveland does have a little bit of a hole at third base. A little bit, yeah. Right now, with Kipnis being down, they got Jose Ramirez at second. But, I mean, they could always trade Kipnis. I'm not even going to mention them trading Lindor because that's never going to happen. But, you know, they could move Kipnis or DH Kipnis more and put somebody in the outfield, try to keep him healthy. And kind of move Mejia around a little bit, play him a third when Kipnis DHs, and move Ramirez second base. Kind of, they got options. So I do think this helps his immediate fantasy value, obviously, because it's get him up to the major leagues. And he probably should have catcher eligibility as soon as he comes up, just from his playing time in the minors. And he's going to pick up third base probably going into next year because he probably won't catch a lot this year. So it'll be nice to kind of roster a second catcher in a lot of two catcher formats that doesn't catch very often, because that's always an added bonus, keep him healthier. But I think with Mejia, you're looking at a guy who's a potential top 5 fantasy catcher long term. I just think you're hurting his growth because he needs to work on his defense. How's he going to work on his defense if he's playing third base?
Well, I'm going to give you a counter argument because I don't think I don't think this is a long term situation. I think they're just trying to get him a faster path to the majors. There are some teams in Major League Baseball, and you can answer this question better than me, because you were a former catcher, right?
No, I'm left-handed. My brother was a catcher.
Oh, that's right, your brother's catcher. But maybe, like, is Yan Gomes a very good defensive catcher?
He must be, because he can't hit. if he's not a good catcher defensively, they must like how he calls the game or something. But they also got Roberto Perez, who is a good backup catcher. He's a good defensive catcher.
Because theoretically, they could, you know, bring up Mejia, have him play, you know, 3 or 4 games, at third base, and have him play, you know, catch a game or two a week, you know, let him develop at the major league level. If they feel the bat is ready, you know, move Jose Ramirez to give Kipnis off days, move him into the outfield because the outfield isn't, extremely strong necessarily.
Yeah.
So I think eventually he is an everyday catcher, and I think that's what the Indians want him to be. But the Indians also are in a position to win right now. And so getting him to the major leagues, even if maybe the bat doesn't play as well at third base, they can still use him at catcher on occasion. And I think then at least he retains it for fantasy.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And that's ultimately the best case scenario for us fantasy guys, right? That mean that he catches a little bit just to keep eligibility, but plays a lot more at third.
Mm-hmm.
Because at third base is so deep, I don't see him being rosterable as a third baseman. And even if he's almost at his peak, you know what I'm saying? because I think the bat plays a lot more at catcher, obviously. That's an obvious statement. But, I, you know, just doing a quick search of his name on Twitter, he's getting called up tomorrow. Mejia and Greg Allen, the Indians are calling them guys up tomorrow, and then they're still planning on sending Mejia to the Fall League as well. So that'll be interesting. He's going to get some time at third base, probably up at the big with the big club too, because he's got some experience in the minor leagues the last week or so. So it'd be fun to watch. Switch hitting catcher that can that has a plus hit tool is extremely rare. It kind of comped him to like similar to like a Russell Martin when he was with the Dodgers, kind of, you know, not the Russell Martin now in Toronto that sells out for power, but the Dodger version that flirted with 280, 290 averages and popped 20 home runs. Ultimately, I think that's what he can be. And that's a hell of an exciting fantasy player, especially in this day and age when I feel like catching has been a wasteland for about 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even longer than that. I don't know.
But. Do you think he could be like maybe a little bit more powerful version of JT Realmuto?
Sure.
Because, I mean, he can swipe some bags, too.
And the exciting thing is Realmuto himself is already a top five catcher. Yeah. So he can be a better version than that. I mean, he's obviously all these guys we just talked about have to be owned in every keeper dynasty format out there. But you know,
and Mejia is the exception rather than the rule of catching
prospects. Yeah, 100%.
Because
I don't roster catching prospects
either, and neither do I. And you and I both rail against it. Don't go out and roster. You know, oh, this guy's like the number three catching prospect in baseball. Well. You know, if he's 19 years old, you'll see him in 6 years.
Right. And then when you see him in 6 years, he might not hit his peak offensively until 7 years or 8 years. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or he may only be one of those top catching prospects because his defense is so good. Reese McGuire is you know, an example.
R.I.P. Yeah. No, remember, I'm sure Mike Zunino owners are – can tell you all about why you don't roster catching prospects.
Unless they're an advanced college bat and you only see those.
Which Zunino was.
Yeah, I mean, and you only see those, you know, Buster Posey, Zunino, you know, then you at least know they're going to be up in a quick pace. Let's move on to another guy, get away from the catching landscape, get away from the hitting landscape for a minute. Let's talk about Mitch Keller, because Mitch Keller is still considered one of the top prospects in baseball, has had a little bit of a down year because of injury. What are your thoughts on him going forward and how far he's tumbled in your ranks? Because I'm assuming he's tumbled a little bit.
Yeah, he has. I don't have my updated list in front of me, and I apologize, but I want to say Keller was in the 50 to 60 range. I think he's pretty much stayed stagnant all year, which is actually dropping because guys graduate. Mm-hmm. You know, guys are jumping him. So he's been around that range or so all year. He's battled a lot of health concerns this year. I mean, he still took the ball 22 starts up to this point. So it's not like he's missed a considerable amount of time. But missing time with a forearm injury is just also very, very worrisome.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's the Pirates. They slow roast their prospects at a Tampa Bay Ray-esque pace. So it's a little bit worrisome with them anyways because they're going to move him slow. Pirates and Rays, basically, they move their guys up a level a year, which is fine, but very, very rarely do you see the Rays jump a pitching prospect or any prospect, you know, from Double A or after like a week or two in Triple A. Some teams will do that. Some teams bypass Triple A altogether. These two teams won't do that. Mm. Based on the timetable, I would assume Keller repeats Double A again next season. So then you're looking at Triple A. So you're looking at probably 2.5 years until we see Mitch Keller, which is fine because the Pirates, that's right around their probably next window of contention when all their other decent mm-hmm. guys from the farm system come back up. And so have Marte and Polanco probably comes into his own, Josh Bell, and all that stuff. I mean, you look at Keller. I think ultimately Keller for fantasy is a low-end number two for me. I just don't know if the strikeouts will be there where you want him to be. The ratios will be nice. But I just don't know if ultimately he's going to strike out enough guys to be that fantasy top-of-the-rotation guy that he was originally billed to be. That's not saying he's not extremely valuable. because you still need guys like Keller on your team, but I don't think he's a cornerstone like he was originally advertised as.
All right. Let's move on and talk about because I'm firing back so much at you. We're taking a little bit longer than I thought we would per guy. So
that's all right.
I'm going to fire back a little bit less unless there's a guy I really feel strongly about one way or another. And let's move on to Kyle Lewis. What are your thoughts on Kyle Lewis? Is he going to be a stud at the major league level?
I hope so. I like this kid. He is my favorite college bat. You know, got drafted out of Samford, or a little tiny school that he got dinged because the competition he faced wasn't the best. But then he came in short season ball, put up really nice numbers, and then obviously everybody knows about the knee injury.
Mm-hmm.
He's been back this year. The strikeouts have risen. The walks have dropped. And more discouragingly, the reports seem to indicate that he's acting like he might not be fully recovered from the knee, just because he's favoring it quite a bit when he plays, and he lost a lot of that explosiveness that he had. Hopefully that's a short-term thing. Hopefully he's able to get past this and look forward and come back from it. But he's still extremely young. He's only 22, but he's 22 and he hasn't played in Double A yet. He was supposed to be a fast riser when he was drafted. The knee injury obviously set that back. Obviously, he's dropped a little bit in the ranks. We just talked about a bunch of outfield prospects that are 20 years old that are higher levels than him, 19 years old, 20 years old. So that's why that's not an indictment really on Lewis, because he was injured. It does slow the ceiling and the ETA down. It does drop the ceiling and slow the ETA down, which takes a hit on his value slightly. And there's always a little bit of a fear that he's getting propped up a little bit because he's the only jewel left in that Seattle system, which is kind of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always when the one guy is the best player in a bad system, it always kind of elevates him a little bit. And I think that might be where with Lewis. But I love Lewis. I'd ride or die with him in fantasy formats. I'd be comfortable with it. I wish I was as comfortable as I was a year ago from now about him. But ultimately, I think he'll be fine. But I do think this pushes him off of center field, hopefully as soon as next year, because I don't think he's going to play center anyways. Hopefully they can stop doing that. Just put him in right field now, especially that O'Neill's out of the system, and let him play in the corner and just focus on the bat a little more. Maybe we can get some of these eye-popping numbers to return.
Do you think the fact that Seattle was willing to send him to the Arizona Fall League at all is kind of a vote of confidence that his knee is okay?
Yeah, I think it is, and it's also a way to make up those lost at-bats. I mean, because he's only played 44 games this year, and one-fourth of those games were in Arizona in rookie ball when he shouldn't have been there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of it's just to make up for the lost time of development and push him a little bit as he's farther and farther away from the surgery toward the end of the season, push him against higher competition, and hopefully next year he can start out in Double-A and hit the ground running.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about who's next on our list. We've got Luis Urias, who I haven't seen play before, and I don't know a ton about. So, kind of give me his profile, and then what you think we can expect from him at the major league level.
He's a tough player to evaluate, only because number one, he's so young. He's 20 years old. He was in AAA last year for the postseason run as a 19-year-old. And he hit .444 in the last week of the season to help them win the title. And this year he jumped Double-A completely. And then now this year they sent him back to Double-A, kind of pumped the brakes a little bit. And the first thing you notice when you look at the scout, when you scout the stat line here on Urias, he walks more than he strikes out. Always a good thing. Then we dig into the numbers a little bit. They're playing him a little more at shortstop now. He was strictly second base until this year. So they're putting him at shortstop, which is always nice. Hopefully you can get something out of that. My fear with Urias is he's not going to steal enough bases to make up for the lack of power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's Ozzy Albies light kind of in that regard, because I think Albies can steal enough bags. I think Albies can steal 20 to 25. I think Urias can steal 15 bags and probably hit 7 or 8 home runs and hit for a good average, but in reality, what value does that carry in this fantasy era? You know what I'm saying? So I think ultimately, while he's going to be a nice productive player on a dynasty league for a long time because he's so young, I just don't know if the ceiling – actually, I do know. I do know that the ceiling is not going to be there as high as it is compared to these other guys. So that's my fear with Urias. He's still a very nice player. He, anytime you walk more than you strike out, is very, very nice. And he's kind of got the Ozzie Albies kind of package without the, they're not as high on the stolen base totals, but the hit tool is probably a little bit better. I do think the power will come, but it's going to be, like I said, 15 homers max probably. So add a second base only profile probably in the major leagues. It's not entirely that valuable. Still a nice player to have, but like Joe Panic-ish with a better batting average.
I mean, and we've talked about how much I hate Joe Panic from a fantasy perspective. I think Joe Panic is a really nice real-life player, but from a fantasy perspective, unless you're playing NL only, to me it's just not a guy I want to roster.
There is some value, though, in if you're in a keeper dynasty that's already been around for a long time, there is some value in a guy like Urias, because you know by the time he's 22 years old, he's going to be up in the major leagues. And he'll can conceivably be up for 12, 15 years. Like, if you know you're in a league like that that's going to last and has already lasted that long, I wouldn't be afraid to grab him as a nice bench bat, or you could fill in the middle infield spot when guys are off. I know that's not the best analysis, but, I mean, he still has value. I don't want to say he doesn't have value. There's a lot of value in safety in these big leagues. And in a 30-team league, I'd be all over him just because the safety, he's going to get the playing time. He's going to hit. I'm confident in the hit tool. It's like a 70 grade hit tool for me, so it's up there. I like him a lot. I just don't think the upside's there.
Yeah, this guy, we were talking about before, in terms of I think we were talking in terms of Tucker, when I said like Tucker's not going to be a negative anywhere. And so he's a really interesting guy, and a guy I like in redrafts and dynasty and keepers, because he's either at worst he's average in every category. The problem with Urias is he's kind of a negative in a couple of categories. I mean, he might be average in speed. You know, he might steal, you know, a handful of bags to keep him kind of somewhat useful. But he's such a negative in power because, I mean, I don't see him being much more than like a 5-7 homer guy at the major league level, personally.
Yeah, and I think he grows into more than that. But, you're not wrong, because I think the first 3-4 years of his career, I think that's probably what it'll be.
Okay. Let's talk about Corey Ray. A real interesting guy. What are your thoughts on him so far this year, and then moving on into the future, what can we expect from him at the major league level?
It's been a rough go about it for a lot of 2016 first-round picks that are outfielders. You look at guys like Mickey Moniak, the stock is down. Blake Rutherford is hitting for absolutely zero power. And Kyle Lewis, obviously, we just touched on. Corey Ray, I was extremely high on Corey Ray when he was drafted, and I did not see the lack of hit tool that he has right now. I did not see that showing up. Career minor league average of .239, he's hitting .240 this season and 681 at bats. So that's a decent chunk to have that low of an average.
And then that's an A ball too as a 22-year-old.
Yeah, it's
almost 23.
The Brewers, they won't admit it, but they might regret what the aggressive assignment, because right when he signed, Corey Ray was built as a power speed guy that's ready to go. I comped him to someone like a Detroit Tigers version of Curtis Granderson, being both from the Chicago area, both, you know, the power speed from the left side, center field defense, probably have to shift off when they get older. You know, it's kind of a similar profile. He's not hitting for the home run power, because he's working on shortening his swing, because the strikeouts are too many, 152 strikeouts and 438 at-bats, or 31%, not great. So that's going to have to get chopped a lot. The walk rate is 9%, which is nice, but it's not strong enough to overcome that. And, you know, another discouraging aspect of this, he's hitting 240 with a 348 BABIP. So the BABIP, you know, you have to think would neutralize a little bit more, and the average would even drop even further. The lack of power, like I said, is discouraging. They gave him the high assignment out of when he signed. He's back in high A again, pretty much repeating. But the Brewers switched franchises. So they were the Brevard County in Florida State League, and then they moved to the Carolina League, and now they're the Carolina Mudcats. So different league, different environment, but it's still the same level. And the stat line is eerily similar to what it was in 2016, just more at-bats this year. Doubles
and
power.
A lot more strikeouts.
Yes, strikeouts jumped up considerably. Home runs dropped, the rate of them anyways. Stolen bases went way up, but he's not very efficient. 24 for 34 for a guy that was supposed to be super advanced college bat out of Louisville that could steal and hit home runs. He's been very discouraging. I still think he ultimately reaches the major leagues. But now I'm a little bit worried about the ceiling because the Brewers have a stacked system. Guys like Brinson, Brett Phillips, Troy Stokes is a nice, interesting sleeper to get to know in that system. A lot of Trent Clark is around. They got a lot of outfielders, and plus Keon Broxton, Domingo Santana, Ryan Braun, if they're going to keep competing. I mean, you think, and if they do trade Braun, they'll probably get another, you know, big piece back for him. So you have to think he could get lost in the shuffle here. I was extremely high on Ray. It's been disappointing to see what he's turned into thus far. I'm not giving up on him, but I kind of wish if I could redo the 2016 pre-draft ranks, he wouldn't be in my top three like he was.
Mm-hmm. I think there are reasons to be discouraged, obviously. You know, we talk about the high strikeout rate, talk about, you know, not making great contact. I think there's still reasons, at least in the physical tools, to be very encouraged. He's fast. He's powerful, or he's got raw power.
He's got to get that hit tool under control.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm gonna still bet on a guy like this, especially because he's gonna tumble down people's prospect boards, and prospect lists.
Yep.
I think now's the time to buy low on Corey Ray.
I would say, yeah, I agree with you. I would say he would still be in my top 100. I'm not giving up on him completely, but I think he started out probably initially in the top 30 for me, but I think now he's probably in the 80 to 90 range. Just because there's so much uncertainty around the skill set. And I wish I could pinpoint the reason why he was lackluster a little bit, but I don't know. I thought he's got solid average tools across the board, but no big flashy tool. So, I mean, that's probably part of the reason why I might have ranked him too high, because now I'm kind of staying away from ranking guys without the big standout tool. But I mean, the Florida State League, when they were in Florida, he had a 101 WRC plus, which is still above average. Now it's down by 92 in the Carolina League. He's older. It's just not a great showing. But I mean, his senior season in Louisville, 15 homers and 44 steals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get where the intrigue is coming from, but I just don't see it right now.
Well, I mean, and you can even with the struggles, 7 home runs and 24 stolen bases, like that's with really bad contact. That's with a 311 on base percentage. Like, I mean, those are like he's got the potential to be very Keon Broxton-esque.
Yep. No, he does.
Strike out a lot, but still do well enough. With the home runs, with the stolen bases, do enough other things to make it to the major league level and be a productive fantasy player.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. It's just I was hoping he'd be a fast rising guy because of how great he was in college. That doesn't mean he's a failure by any means, but it's going to take a little bit longer.
Okay, let's move on to a different profile kind of guy in Yusnel Diaz. I think some people may be coming around on him a little bit more. What are your thoughts so far? He's you know, had a short sample, 99 plate appearance sample at the AA level, after doing fairly well at the high A level. What are your thoughts on him this year so far, and then moving on into next year or moving on into the future?
Yusnel Diaz, and you know, I kind of lump him and Starling Heredia together, two Dodgers. Shocking, the Dodgers signed two big Cuban guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Diaz. very, very he's a guy, again, we talked about, seems to be a theme, doesn't have a standout tool. I would put the hit tool before this year. I mean, not right now, he's exploding, so I'd probably bump him up to above average now. But the 10% walk rate is beautiful to go along with that. The nice average in AA this year, 348, 414, 506, and 26-game sample. Not a lot to hang on there, just being a 26-game sample, but, I mean, you got to like this, gotta like this, the stats. Altogether, in between AA and high A, looking at a guy with 10 homers, 9 steals, hitting right around the 290 mark. So he's a guy, though, the Dodgers, with the money they spend, they're always going to have somebody better. So I'm a little bit concerned. He's going to need a trade to maximize his complete ceiling, but I still love him a lot as far as the investment they made, and I still think he's a possible 2020 guy, but he's going to need to stay healthy for a complete season, which he didn't last year, and he's going to need to tap into that power a little more. I mean, he had a shoulder injury shortly after he got signed. So he had to get over that. I don't know if the hit tool is ever going to be as great. I mean, he's obviously better now, but I still think he's a 260, 270 guy. But I think 2020 is within reach. I just think he needs to make some adjustments, and I'm not betting on him reaching that. But again, he's a guy with all average tools and no elite standout tool. So he's got a place in deeper formats. If I'm in a shallow format where I'm rostering, you know, a 12-team league, you roster about 5 or 6 prospects each, I really wouldn't roster him in leagues like that.
All right. Let's talk about a guy that I really like, and it's kind of been a pop-up guy this year, kind of. That's not necessarily a person people were talking about coming into the season, but has really kind of flourished this year, and was largely talked about in trade talks, though he didn't get moved at the deadline, Estevan Florial. What are your thoughts on his season this year and his kind of big jump, and then moving on into what can we expect from him in the future?
This is a guy that, as a prospect guy, I'm all over dudes with this profile. The power speed mix is unmatched among many players like this out there, while still maintaining a hit tool. Strikes out a little too much, but that's a common theme in the game, and you can kind of work around it. It is a 27% strikeout rate and a 31% strikeout rate at high A, and 31% at A ball and 27 in high A. That's far too high. But he's extremely raw. He's from Haiti. Not a real big baseball hotbed as you would think it might be, but you know, the other half of the island is. But not a lot of guys signed out of Haiti. But you look at the 13 homers between two levels, 22 stolen bases, hitting about 300, 370 OBP. He's a guy with the Yankees. He plays a no-shit defense in center field. He's a franchise cornerstone, potentially. They were able to get rid of Jorge Mateo and Dustin Fowler primarily because they had this guy behind them. The A's wanted Florial. They ended up parting with both Fowler and Mateo because they wanted to appease him and keep Florial, but also give the A's something of value. So keep in mind of how highly thought of Jorge Mateo was a couple years back in the prospect circles, and that's the guy they wanted to get rid of to keep Florial. So I mean, you know how prospects' value can change, but Mateo was still a guy with game-changing speed. Florial has not quite as – he's not nearly as fast as Mateo, but the rest of the game is better. So I think they made the right call here. Being 19 years old, the most encouraging thing is in two really tough pitching environments in the Sally League and the Florida State League, 23 doubles combined. So he got to imagine some of those doubles turning to homers. I think he's an easy 2020 guy in his future. Kind of a poor man's version of Ron Acuna and Victor Robles, like we talked about earlier. He's getting the hype now, but he's not getting nearly as much hype as those two guys. So he's a guy that if you ended up with Florial, I wouldn't really – he's a guy that's tough to trade away just because he can do so much.
What do you think of his hit tool?
It's a little bit behind the two guys I mentioned there earlier, but he's also raw in the sense that he's been playing baseball less than those guys. I do think it comes around. I think he's obviously going to be a high BABIP guy because he can run. And he does barrel a lot of balls, but he still is a little bit rough around the edges. Obviously, you can tell by the strikeout rate. he has a tendency to not he gets himself out. He swings at a lot of pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at. A lot of pitchers' pitches are just off the corner. He'll yank the ground ball, pull it instead of going the other way with it. Little immature things like that as far as offensively. But, I mean, I like him. I mean, in last year in 67 games across three different levels, he stole 10 bases and had 20 extra base hits, which 8 of them were homers. The walk rate is still good. It's just a strikeout sort of problem. I think he can fix that. Yankees are the best organization, one of the best organizations at in developing talent. So I'm excited about Florial in the future, and the Yankees, I think we're smart at not giving him up.
All right.
I prefer him to your boyfriend, Blake Rutherford.
How dare you? Though, I mean, Rutherford has definitely tumbled down some prospect lists this year with his struggles.
Yeah.
Let's finish off with Justice Sheffield, another Yankees prospect, a pitcher with a little bit of a funky mechanics.
I would say that. Yeah.
He's an interesting guy. He was traded in, or he was traded over to them from Cleveland. So what are your thoughts on Justice Sheffield?
Trying to see if I can pinpoint exactly what that injury was. I know he's missed a significant time this season, and I think that's the reason why it was an oblique injury. Okay. So that I know he missed a lot of time, so that's the reason why they're sending him out to the fall league. And he hasn't even thrown 100 innings this year. So he's going out there to make up for lost time. He's the kind of guy I think will be fine in that pitching environment, if he's healthy, of course, because you know he's advanced. He's a command control guy, knows how to sequence. A lot of those Vanderbilt guys do. So he's on top of all that. I think he'll be fine out in the rough environment in Arizona. But I'm sorry, he's not a Vanderbilt guy. His brother was. That's my mistake. His brother, Jordan Sheffield, for the Dodgers, was a Vanderbilt guy. Justice didn't go to college when he was drafted. But sorry, I confused myself, lost my train of thought. But I like Sheffield going forward. I think ultimately he's a high-end number four pitcher. That's factoring in Yankee Stadium, factoring in all the rough environments he's going to deal with American League East. Sheffield is not really a guy I'm overly excited about from a fantasy realm, but he's advanced for his age. Hopefully he gets over this oblique strain, gets back on the field with no hiccups. I mean, that's always a tough injury. It kind of lingers, especially when you're trying to force things to get back in time for the fall league and stuff. So hopefully they take it slow with him. I think ultimately he's a league average player. Better than league average guy and probably average guy for your fantasy squad down the line. I like him a little bit, but I think the Yankees with Chance Adams and all that stuff around, and the Yankees will spend money on starting pitching, I think, coming up here soon. So I'm not as high on Sheffield as I think other outlets are.
Yeah, I was high on him when he came into or when he was drafted, but I've kind of tempered my expectations. I just don't know how many guys he's going to strike out at the major league level.
Yeah, he's more of a ground ball, get a ground ball, catch you off balance kind of guy.
I think he'll be a useful guy in deeper formats, but sure. In like 10, 12, he's going to be a waiver wire guy, 10, 12 team leagues, things like that. So I think I'm trying to think of a good comp, but I'm not.
It's hard. Yeah, no, it's think of a guy that gives up roughly a hit an inning, strikes out 7.5 and walks 3 per 9.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's going to have years in which that plays fairly well, but he's never going to be kind of like a number 2-3 starter in fantasy. At least
no,
I
agree
think
with
so.
You. No, I'm with you on that 100%. He's going to obviously have his hot streaks like everybody else. And another thing with Sheffield is he's got really no out pitch. He's kind of the sum of everything is greater. You know, he's another common theme of the podcast. He's a Dansby Swanson pitcher. No standout skills, but everything is good.
All right. That kind of wraps up the list that I came prepared with. Anybody else you want to make quick mention of that's going to be in Arizona Fall League?
Well, I'm not sure if he's going to be in the Fall League anymore because he's getting called up, it seems. But Sandy Alcantara from the Cardinals. He's had a really rough go of things in AA this year. He's been snake bitten by the home run ball. But I'm very, very excited to see how that fastball plays in short stints. Because as a starter, he's up in the 98-99 range consistently. It's about where he sits. So I think in the bullpen he could be up 100, 101 consistently. So that'll be exciting, and hopefully the secondaries can play off that fastball. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, I love the fall league. These rosters are going to change significantly because it is early. These rosters will change quite a bit until they're finalized. There's still plenty of spaces that teams have to fill. I'm actually excited from a different aspect. I want to look at a lot of the pitchers that are here because it's a tough environment. There's a lot of pitchers I like that kind of fall in the mid-rotation starter range. And this is kind of where guys like that separate themselves from the pack. So I want to see, and I'm also interested to see guys like Ryan Mountcastle play a little bit. For those that don't know, Mountcastle is a shortstop in the Orioles organization. And I say shortstops with air quotes because he's not really a shortstop, but he kind of a guy that can play anywhere. But he's got thump. And the Brewers have some exciting guys, Lucas Erceg, Jacob Gatewood, that I'm excited to see.
Yankees have Dylan Tate.
He was in the fall league last year and kind of put himself back on the map. He's had a very nice season. So Dylan Tate's kind of back from the prospect dead, so to speak. So he's exciting. Again, to watch Mejia play third base consistently there is going to be something that's going to be fun to watch. A lot of good catching prospects in this. If catching prospects are your thing, this is where you need to be because there's a lot of exciting catching prospects here. A lot of guys that should move relatively quickly that, you know, got a good defenders and college bat catchers that are in this. Andrew Knisner from the Cardinals doesn't get any pub. He's a good catching prospect. Not that they need another one with Carson Kelly and Molina around, but Ian Rice from the Cubs is a guy I like. Jake Rogers, Sean Murphy, Taylor Gushue from the Nationals. Jordan Alvarez is a guy I wanted to touch on really quick.
I was going to mention him because he's a big dude.
Big dude, and he's a young dude, and he's a guy that I love. He's comfortably inside my top 100, which is very rare for me to have a first base prospect only that's rated that high for me. But I am in love with this kid's profile. Hit tool over power, but he's still going to hit 20 home runs. He's a potential guy that's going to be a first baseman in fantasy that's going to be rosterable because he's probably top out about 20 home runs because he hits so many line drives. But he can legitimately threaten to hit 300 every year. He's kind of the guy that everyone wants Dom Smith to kind of be.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in a better organization, better situation. So Yordan Alvarez is a guy I'm really excited about. He's on the same team as obviously Kyle Tucker and Victor Robles. So,
I think Alvarez is one of those guys, though. I know you said you think he's like kind of a 20-homer guy. I think
he could grow into it, too. He's got a lot of ways to go.
Not only does he got a lot of ways to grow, I think he's like a launch angle change, and it doesn't even need to be a big one.
Some organization, too. They can do that.
Yeah, to being like a 30-homer guy.
Can see it.
And still keep the average, you know, still hit 290, 300 with 30 home runs, which, you know, even in today's power game, plays really well at first base.
Yeah. Josh Naylor, since we're talking about first base prospects, he'll be there, too.
So will Bobby Bradley, my boy.
And he will. And I'm especially excited to see Naylor because Josh Naylor, if you look at the numbers, he's got two things working against him throughout his entire minor league career. Number one, he's always been one of the youngest players in his levels, which is good. But if you look at the raw numbers, you're like, you're not that impressed, right? Especially for a first baseman. Second thing, he has never spent any time in an offensive ballpark, ever. In any league he's played at any stop, and he was with the Marlins. He was in the worst park in the league he played in. Consistently got traded to the Padres. That still didn't change. In the Cal League, he was in the worst park. Now he's going to an environment in Arizona, and he's going to impress people with his batting practice shows he's going to put on. Everyone forgets, this dude put on the best batting practice display of the Futures game 2 years ago when it was in Miami. This year when it was in Miami, he put on the best batting practice show of anyone. So he's a guy everyone's kind of sleeping on a little bit. I know the rise of Rhys Hoskins might make for people change about how they view first base only prospects. And it probably should a little bit. I think they get nicked a little too unfairly. But he's a guy to watch, and I think you could probably get fairly cheap in your dynasty format. Because, again, he's a very, very good hitter. But you pull up the numbers on his stat page, they're not going to jump off the page at you. They're just not.
I got one more name to talk about, and
sure.
You know, he's a little bit older for the levels he's played at this year. But let me give you the stat line. You tell me if you can guess the guy. Going to be in the Arizona Fall League. 5 home runs, 34 stolen bases. His triple slash, .301, .363, .442 between 2 or 3 levels.
We didn't talk about him yet.
80 grade name.
Tito Polo?
Yeah, there you go.
Yep, Tito Polo. I actually own him in a dynasty league. I was kind of disappointed he got traded because it's one of those leagues where I'm the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to roster a certain number of Yankees on my team, whether major leaguers or minor leaguers. And then I liked him. He got traded to the White Sox, and I was like, ah, shit. But 80 grade name, been traded twice. So that kind of is interesting in itself. He was a Pirate, then he was a Yankee, and now he's a White Sox. But yeah, you touched on it. He's a very intriguing guy and a guy that nobody is paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you squint, those numbers look awfully similar to a lot of those high profile guys we talked about earlier today.
Mm-hmm. He is old. I mean, he is older for the levels. He's 23
years old. He's on the DL right now too. Mm-hmm. So,
but I mean, definitely a guy to watch is maybe kind of a late bloomer type prospect.
Sure. Absolutely. I'm excited about this fall league, man. We got Tyler J. Remember Tyler J, the high pick for the Twins, missed all year. He had thoracic outlet syndrome. Had that corrected. He's pitching in the fall league this year. Cardinals arm, Jordan Hicks, a small righty. I've seen him pitch this year in Kane County in a low A. Nasty stuff. Doesn't really have an idea where it's going, but he can be a nice potential arm. He's throwing in the fall league this year. Catching prospects galore, like I mentioned. It's catching prospect heaven in the Arizona Fall League. And there's a lot of, you know, Lamonte Wade of the Twins getting no publicity, but he's nice power-speed combination. Oscar Mercado for the Cardinal system, nice power-speed combination, came out of nowhere. Dude was a stud defensive shortstop. Now he's a mediocre defensive center fielder that's hitting for power, which is unheard of. In over 1 year's time span, but I can go on forever, so I probably should just end it now. But this won't be the last time you hear me mention something about the Fall League, whether or not it's on my Twitter account or on these airwaves, because Fall League is exciting to watch. And 1 2-second rant,
mm-hmm.
It's 2017. All the Arizona Fall League games better be televised this year.
They won't be.
Or at least streamable on, not televised, but MLB TV. Show them all. Because all those parks in Arizona have all the technology. That's part of the reason why the Fall League is there, why they send all these guys there. All that hit effects stuff and all that Brooks-based, all the pitch effects, everything.
The MLB
there.
Channel would rather show you some 1980s or 1990s baseball movie than show Arizona Fall League games. And it's ridiculous.
You don't even have to show them on the network. Make them streamable. I pay good money for MLB TV. So put all the Fall League games on there and I'll be the happiest person in the world.
It's not going to happen, but thanks for the rant.
No, it needs to happen. It's a rant that needs. I do it every year because it's baffling to me.
It won't happen. I mean,
all spring training games and all those Arizona ballparks are shown on some sort of streaming service or on TV. And Fall League has the same capabilities, and they just don't do it.
Yeah, no, I understand. But it's
with especially the rise of fantasy baseball, MLB.com employs fantasy baseball people, like that's their jobs on their website.
Mm-hmm. I applied for a position there actually and didn't get it.
And they acknowledge that it's a thing. So show that, have fantasy guys talk about, even if you don't want to do, they don't integrate fantasy baseball into anything. It's a significant market. I think you can at least tap into. And football does this beautifully. NFL does this. Mm-hmm.
And basketball's starting to do it really well as well. I mean, for some reason, like Major League Baseball has always been kind of the slowest to the fantasy game.
I think it's because the appeal of Major League Baseball is like 50 and 60-year-old men. I think that's what they think their target demographic is, and they're not trying to expand. But fantasy baseball is the best fantasy sport to play.
Mm-hmm.
I think it separates good owners from the mediocre owners. I think
checkers to chess.
Yes.
Football is checkers, and baseball is chess.
Football, fastest finger on the waiver wire wins your leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And
or whoever, you know, whoever gets injured, you know, I mean, whoever still has a starting running back at the end of the week, you know.
You can't fake it in baseball. You're either a good GM in baseball fantasy teams or you're not. There's just no way around. And they need to corner into this market. I'm going to have this rant multiple times, so get used to it. But
good. All right, well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Matt, tell people where you can reach, what you're working on.
MD Temp FWFB. I was going to drop my newest update and my farm system rankings, but it turns out that a couple of those teams, the Angels and Tigers, decided to make trades. So and Seattle. So I'm going to have to re-rank those guys and get it out there. It's not going to probably change my overall rankings of those guys because nobody earth-shattering got moved. But it's still trades nonetheless. So I don't like having inaccurate things when I release it. So I'm going to mess with it a little bit.
All right. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read everything I write for baseball over at FanGraphs, for football over at Fantasy Alarm, and then on Friends of Fantasy Benefits for pretty much just anything randomly I write for either sport. So you can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Matt and I are going to be on this afternoon. It'll be yesterday because or for you folks that are listening now, because this will come out on September 1st. But definitely check that out and enjoy that. Thursdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific. But you can catch catch a replay on iTunes, Google Play, anything like that, iHeartRadio, stuff like that. So that is going to wrap us up for Matt and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.